Chapter 22. Dreams. It was night, but the dark fairy did not sleep. The night was too beautiful to sleep it away. But she still saw the man-goyle anyway. By now she dreamed of him whether she was asleep or not. Her curse had already turned most of his skin to jade. Jade. Green. Like life itself. Petrified abundance. Heartstone, sown by the heartless. He would be so much more beautiful once the jade had replaced all his human skin, and once he fulfilled the promise of his new flesh. The future as decided by the past. All those things hidden in the folds of time. They could only be known in dreams, which revealed so much more to her than to men or Goyle, perhaps because time meant so little when you were immortal. She should have stayed in the castle with the bricked-up windows and waited there for news from Hensel, but Camien wanted to get back to the mountains where he was born and return to his fortress under the earth. He longed for the deep, as she longed for the night sky and for white lilies floating on water, although she still tried to convince herself that love alone could feed her soul. All she saw in the train window was her own reflection, a pale phantom on a pane of glass, behind which the world slipped past far too quickly. Camille knew that she disliked trains almost as much as she disliked the depths of the earth, so he'd had the walls of her carriage decorated with intarsia, ruby blossoms and malachite leaves, a sky of lapis lazuli, hills of jade, and, inlaid with moonstone, the shimmering surface of a lake. That was love, wasn't it? The stone images were beautiful, very beautiful. And whenever she no longer could bear seeing the hills and fields rush by as if they were dissolving into the fabric of time, she would run her fingers over the inlaid blossoms. And yet the noise of the train still hurt her ears, and all the metal around her made her fairy skin crawl. Yes, he loved her. But he was still going to marry the dollface, the human princess with the blank eyes and the beauty she owed to the lilies of the fairies. Amelie. Her name sounded as bland as her face looked. How she would have loved to kill her. A poisoned comb. A dress that would eat into her flesh while she twirled in it in front of her golden mirrors. How she would scream and tear at her skin, which was so much softer than that of her bridegroom. The fairy pressed her forehead against the cool glass. She couldn't understand where all that jealousy was coming from. After all, it wasn't the first time Camien had taken himself another woman. No Goyle loved only once. Nobody loved only once. Fairies least of all. The dark fairy knew all the stories about her kind, that those who loved one of them invariably fell into madness, that they had no hearts, just as they had neither fathers nor mothers. At least that part was true. She pressed her hand against her chest. No heart. So where did the love she felt come from? Outside, the stars were floating like blossoms on the inky waters of a river. The Goyle feared water, even though it had created their caves, and the sound of its dripping was as natural a part of their cities as the sound of the wind above the ground. They feared water so much that the sea had restricted Camien's conquests, making him dream of the power of flight. But she couldn't give him wings, any more than she could give him children. She was born of the water he feared so much, and all the words that meant so much to them, sister, brother, daughter, son, meant nothing to her. The dollface couldn't give him children either, unless he wanted to sire one of those crippled monsters some human women had borne his soldiers. How often do I have to tell you? I couldn't care less about her, but I need this peace. He actually believed every one of his words, but she knew him better than that. He did want peace, but even more than that, he yearned to caress human skin and to make one of them his wife. His fascination with all things human had begun to concern her as much as it did his people. Where did the love come from? What was it made of? Stone like him? Water like her? When she had first set out to find him, it had just been a game. A game with the toy her dreams had shown her. The Goyle who was smashing the world to pieces who disregarded its rules just as she did. The fairies played with this world. The last one to have done so now wore a skin of bark, and yet she had still dispatched her moths to find Camienne. The tent in which she first met him had smelled of blood, of the death she did not understand, and still she had thought of it all as a game. She had promised him the world, his flesh in the flesh of his enemies, and much too late she had realized what he had sown in her. Love. Worst of all poisons.
You should wear human dresses more often.
Eyes of gold, lips of fire. He didn't look tired, even though he had barely slept in days. The fairy's dress rustled as she turned. Human women dressed like flowers, layers of petals around a mortal, rotting core. She had had the dress made in the likeness of one of the paintings that hung in the dead general's castle. Camienne had gazed at it often, as if it showed a world he longed for. The fabric would have made 10 dresses, but she loved the rustling of the silk and its cool smoothness on her skin. No news from Hensau? As if she didn't know the answer. Why had her moth still not found the one she was looking for? She could see him so clearly, as if she only had to reach out to feel his jade skin at her fingertips.
Hensau will find him, if he exists.
Camienne stood behind her. He doubted her dreams, but never his jasper shadow. Hensau. Someone else she would have loved to kill. But Camienne would forgive his death even less than that of his future bride. He had killed his own brothers, as the Goyle often did, but Hensau was closer to him than a brother. Maybe even closer than she was. Their reflections in the train window melted into one. Her breath still quickened whenever he stood near her. Where does love come from?
Forget the jade Goyle. Forget your dreams, he whispered, undoing her hair. I will give you new dreams. Just tell me what you want.
She'd never told Camienne that she had also found him first in her dreams. He wouldn't have liked it. Neither Goyle nor men lived long enough to understand that yesterday was born of tomorrow, just as tomorrow was born of yesterday. Chapter 23. Trapped. When Jacob rode into the gorge through which he had once before entered the Valley of the Fairies, he felt as if he were riding into his own past. Nothing seemed to have changed in 3 years. The creek running along the bottom, the spruces clawing into the slopes, silence between the rocks. Only his shoulder reminded him of how much had happened since. It still felt as if the tailor was stitching seams through his skin. Valiant was sitting in front of him. He kept turning, clearly delighted at how awful Jacob was feeling.
"Oh, you look terrible, Reckless,"
he observed for the umpteenth time, with undisguised glee.
"That poor girl is staring at you again. She's probably terrified you'll fall off your horse before her boyfriend can get his skin back. Don't you worry, though. After you're dead, and your brother has turned into a Goyle, I'll console her. I'm quite partial to human women."
It had been like that ever since they set out, but Jacob was too dazed by the fever to reply. Even the words Will had said to him in the cave no longer penetrated his agony, and by now he longed for the healing air of the fairy's realm as much for his own sake as for his brother's. "Not far now, Jacob. You just have to get through the gorge, and then you're in their valley." Clara was riding right behind him. Every now and then Will rode up next to her, as if trying to make her forget what had happened in the cave. Love and fear were battling each other on her face, but she rode on. Like him. Like Will. And the dwarf could still betray them all. The sun was already standing quite low, and the shadows between the rocks were growing. The foaming creek along which they rode was so dark, it looked like it was carrying the night into the gorge, and they had not gotten very far when Will suddenly reined in his horse.
"What is it?"
Valiant asked anxiously. "There are Goyle here." There was not a trace of doubt in Will's voice.
"Goyle?"
Valiant cast a malicious glance at Jacob.
"Excellent. I get on great with the Goyle."
Jacob put his hand over the dwarf's mouth. He slackened the mare's reins and listened, but the rush of the water drowned out all other sounds.
"Act as if we're watering the horses,"
he whispered to Clara and Will.
"I smell them too,"
Fox hissed.
"Dead ahead."
"But why are they hiding?" Will shuddered like an animal catching the scent of its pride. Valiant looked at him as if he saw him for the first time. Then he spun around so abruptly that he nearly fell off his horse.
"You cunning dog,"
he hissed at Jacob.
"What's the colour of the stone in his skin? Green, right?"
"So what?"
"So what? Don't take me for a fool. It's jade. The Goyle are offering £2 a red moonstone for him."
"Your brother, indeed.
Don't make me laugh."
The dwarf gave him a conspiratorial wink.
"You found him, just like you found the glass slipper and the wishing table. But why are you taking him to the fairies?"
"Jade." Jacob stared at Will's pale green skin. He had, of course, heard the stories. The Goyle King and his invincible bodyguard. Chanute had once fantasized about finding him and selling him to the Empress. But they couldn't seriously think his brother was the Jade Goyle. He could see the mist-shrouded valley at the end of the gorge. So close.
"Let's take him to one of their fortresses and split the reward,"
Valiant hissed again.
"If they capture him here, they won't give us anything for him."
But Jacob ignored him. He saw Will shudder. "Is there another way into the valley?" Jacob asked the dwarf.
"Sure," Valiant replied with a smirk. "If you think your so-called brother has time to go the long way around, not to mention yourself."
Will looked around like a caged animal. Clara steered her horse next to Jacob's.
"Get him away from here," she whispered. "Please."
But then what? A few yards away, a group of pine trees grew in front of the rocks. It was so dark under their branches that even as close as this, Jacob couldn't see beneath them. Jacob leaned over to Will and reached for his arm.
"Follow me to those pines," he whispered to him. "Dismount when I do."
It was time to play some hide-and-seek and fancy dress. Will hesitated, but then he picked up his reins and rode after Jacob. The shade under the pines was as black as soot, darkness that, with luck, would conceal them even from Goyle eyes.
"Remember how we fought when we were kids?"
Jacob whispered to Will before he dismounted. "You always let me win."
"That's exactly what we'll do now."
Fox ran to Jacob's side.
"What are you doing? No matter what happens," he whispered to her, "I want you to stay with Will. Promise me. If you don't, we'll all die."
Will climbed out of the saddle.
"I want you to fight back, Will, and it has to look real,"
Jacob whispered.
"We need to end up under those trees."
Then, without warning, he punched his brother in the face. Immediately the gold in Will's eyes flared up. He hit back so hard that Jacob fell to his knees. Skin of stone and a rage that he had never seen before on his brother's face. Maybe not such a good plan after all, Jacob. Chapter 24. The Hunters. Hensau had reached the ravine at daybreak. The unicorns grazing in the misty valley beyond had left him with little doubt that Nessa had led them to the right place. However, as the sun sank ever lower, he began to ask himself whether the Jade Goyle had been shot by his brother after all. But then, Nessa pointed silently toward the end of the gorge. They had a girl and a fox with them, just as Three Fingers had said, and they had caught themselves a dwarf. Not dumb. Not even Nessa knew how to get past the unicorns. But Hensau had heard the rumors that some dwarfs knew the secret. Be that as it may, Hensau had no ambition to be the first Goyle to see the fairies' island. He would rather have ridden through a dozen hungry forests, or slept with the blind snakes in the depths of the earth. No. He would get the Jade Goyle before he could hide behind the unicorns.
"Commander, they're fighting each other."
Nessa sounded surprised. What did she expect?
The rage came with the stone skin, just like the gold in the eyes. And who would feel the brunt of it first? The brother, of course.
Yes. Kill him,
Hensel thought, watching the jade goyle through his spyglass.
Maybe there have been times when you wanted to do just that, but he was always the older, the stronger. You'll see. The rage of the goyle more than makes up for that.
The older brother fought quite well, but he didn't stand a chance.
There.
He fell to his knees. The girl ran to the jade goyle and pulled him away, but he shook her off. And as his brother struggled back to his feet, he kicked him in the chest so hard that he staggered back under the trees. The blackness beneath the branches swallowed them both, and Hensel was just about to give the order to ride down when the jade goyle reappeared from under the leaves. He was already recoiling from the glare of the sun, pulling his hood down over his face as he headed toward his horse. The fight had made his step a little unsteady, but he would soon feel how much quicker his new flesh healed.
Mount up,
Hensel whispered to Nessa.
Let's catch ourselves a fairy tale.
Chapter 25. The Bait.
Rocks? Shrubs? Where could they be hiding?
How would you know, Jacob? You're not a goyle.
Maybe you should have asked your brother.
Jacob pulled the hood closer around his face and forced the horse into a slow gait. How could the goyle have known they'd be coming through this gorge?
Not now, Jacob.
He couldn't tell which hurt more, the shoulder or his face. Human flesh was so soft compared to jade knuckles. For a few terrible moments, he had really thought Will would beat him to death. He still wasn't sure how much of the rage he'd felt in those blows was that of the goyle, and how much was his brother's. Water sprayed on his feverish skin as he urged Will's horse through the creek. The hoofbeats echoed through the narrow gorge, and Jacob was beginning to wonder whether Will hadn't just sensed the goyle in his own flesh when suddenly there was movement on the slope to his left.
Now!
He slackened the reins. Will's bay gelding was not as fast as the mare, but very hardy, and Jacob was an excellent rider. They, of course, tried to cut him off, but their horses shied on the loose rubble, just as he had hoped. The gelding dashed past them, galloping into the misty valley. Immediately, Jacob was assaulted by memories that seemed to have been lying in wait for him among these mountains. Happiness and love, fear and death. The unicorns lifted their heads. Of course they weren't white. Why were things in this world always whitewashed? Their hides were brown and grey, mottled black, and pale yellow like the autumn sun drifting through the damp fog above. They were watching him, but so far none of them looked ready to attack. Jacob looked around at his pursuers. There were five of them. He immediately recognized the officer. It was the same one who had led the goyle at the farm. His jasper brown skin was cracked at the forehead, as if someone had tried to split it open, and one of his golden eyes was as cloudy as watery milk. So they really were following him. Jacob leaned down over the neck of the horse. The gelding's hooves sank deep into the damp grass, but fortunately, he hardly slowed down.
Ride, Jacob. Draw them away before your brother gets it into his head to join them.
The goyle were coming closer, but they didn't shoot. Of course not. If they believed Will was the jade goyle, then they'd want him alive. One of the unicorns whinnied. Jacob shot a look at the herd.
Stay where you are.
Another glance over his shoulder. The goyle had split up. They were trying to encircle him. The pain from the wound made his eyes water, and for a moment Jacob thought he was falling back through time, and he saw himself lying on the grass again with a hole in his back.
Faster. He had to be faster.
But the gelding was already panting heavily, and sadly the goyle no longer rode those half-blind horses they bred under the earth. One of them was getting very close. The officer. Jacob averted his face, but the hood slipped off his head just as he tried to reach for it. The surprise on the jasper face quickly turned into rage, the same rage Jacob had already seen in his brother. The game was up.
Where was Will?
Jacob glanced desperately behind him. The goyle officer was looking in the same direction. His brother was galloping straight at the unicorns, with the dwarf perched in front of him. He was riding Clara's horse and had given her the mare. The grass beside her rippled as if the wind were blowing over it.
fox, nearly as fast on her paws as the horses. Jacob drew the pistol, but his left hand no longer obeyed him, and he was a much worse shot with his right. Still, he managed to shoot two Goyle out of their saddles as they turned and headed toward Will. The Milkai leveled his gun at him, his jasper face stiff with rage. The anger had made him forget which brother he was supposed to hunt, but his horse stumbled in the high grass, and his bullet missed its mark.
"Faster, Jacob!"
He barely managed to stay in the saddle. Will had nearly reached the unicorns. Jacob prayed the dwarf had told them the truth this time.
"Ride!"
he thought desperately. But Will suddenly slowed down. He brought his horse to a halt, and Jacob knew it wasn't out of concern for him. Will turned in the saddle and stared at the Goyle, just as he had done at the farm. Milkai had meanwhile remembered whom he was charged to capture. Jacob took aim, but his shot just grazed the jasper skin.
"Damned right hand."
And Will turned his horse. Jacob screamed his name. One of the Goyle had nearly reached Will. It was a female, amethyst on brown jasper. She drew her saber as Clara steered her horse protectively in front of Will's. But Jacob's bullet was faster. The Milkai uttered a hoarse howl as the she-goyle fell and drove his horse even harder toward Will. Just a few more yards. The dwarf was staring, wide-eyed, toward the goyle. But Clara had gotten hold of Will's reins, and the horse she had ridden so many times yielded as she pulled it toward the unicorns. The herd had watched the hunt as indifferently as humans would watch a group of squabbling sparrows. Jacob fought to breathe as Clara rode toward them. But this time the dwarf really had told the truth. The unicorns let Will and Clara pass. It was only when the goyle rode toward them that they attacked. The valley filled with shrill whinnies, beating hooves and rearing bodies. Jacob heard shots.
"Forget the goyle, Jacob. Follow your brother."
His heart pounding in his throat, he rode toward the agitated herd. He imagined he could once more feel the unicorn horns tearing into his back, warm blood running down his skin.
"Not this time, Jacob. Do as the dwarf told you." "It's easy. Close your eyes and keep them shut, or they will skewer you."
A horn brushed his thigh, nostrils snorted in his ear. The cold air carried the scent of horse and deer.
"Keep your eyes closed, Jacob."
The sea of shaggy bodies seemed endless. His left arm felt dead, and his right hand clutched the neck of the gelding. Then suddenly, he no longer heard snorting but the wind in a thousand leaves, the lapping of water, and the rustling of reeds. He opened his eyes, and it was just as it had been back then. Everything had vanished. The goyle, the unicorns, the misty valley. Instead, a lake glistened under the evening sky. On it floated the lilies for which he had ventured here 3 years earlier. The leaves on the willows by the shore were as fresh and green as newly emerged shoots, and in the distance, drifting on the waves, lay the island from which there was no return. "Except for you, Jacob." The warm air caressed his skin, and the pain in his shoulder ebbed away like the water on the reed-lined shore. He slid off the exhausted gelding. Clara and Fox rushed toward him. Will, however, was standing by the shore, staring across at the island. He seemed unhurt, but when he turned his face to Jacob, his eyes were still on fire, and the jade was speckled with just a few last remnants of his human skin.
"Here we are. Happy?"
Valiant stood between the willows. He was plucking unicorn hairs from his sleeve. "Who took off your chain?" Jacob tried to grab the dwarf, but Valiant dodged him nimbly.
"Luckily, a female heart is much more compassionate than the piece of rock that's rumbling around in your chest,"
he purred, while Clara sheepishly returned Jacob's glance.
"And what are you getting all huffy about? We're even, except for the fact that the unicorns trampled my hat."
Valiant accusingly patted his greying curls.
"You could at least pay for that." "Us? Even? Shall I show you the scars on my back?"
Jacob rubbed his shoulder. It felt as if he had never fought against the tailor.
"Just get out of here," he said to the dwarf, "before I shoot you after all." "Really?"
Valiant cast a contemptuous look at the island drifting in the distance.
I'm quite sure I'll live to see your name chiselled onto a gravestone long before mine.
M'lady, he said, turning to Clara,
you should come with me. This will not end well. Have you ever heard of Snow White, the human girl who lived with some dwarf brothers before falling for one of the Empress's ancestors? She ended up very miserable and finally ran away from him. With a dwarf.
Really, murmured Clara, but she didn't seem to have been listening. She stepped toward the shore of the blossom-covered lake as if she had forgotten everything around her, even Will, who was standing just a few yards away. Bluebells grew between the willows, their petals mirroring the dark blue of the evening sky. She picked one, and it chimed softly, wiping all the fear and sadness from her face. Valiant uttered an exasperated groan.
Fairy magic,
he muttered scornfully.
I think I'd better take my leave.
Wait, said Jacob. There used to be a boat by the shore. Where is it? But when he turned around, the dwarf had already disappeared between the trees. Will was staring at his reflection in the water. Jacob skimmed a stone across the dark surface, but his brother's reflection quickly returned, distorted and even more threatening. I nearly killed you back there in the gorge. Will's voice sounded barely distinct from that of a goyle now. Look at me. No matter what you're hoping to find here, it's too late. You need to face it. Clara was gazing at them. The fairy magic clung to her like pollen. Only Will seemed immune.
Where's your brother, Jacob? Where did you leave him?
The rustling leaves sounded like their mother's voice. Will backed away from Jacob as though afraid he might strike him again. Let me go to them. The sun was setting behind the trees, and its dying light spilled onto the lake like molten gold. The fairy lilies opened their pale blossoms, welcoming the night. Jacob pulled Will away from the water. You wait here by the shore, he said. Stay right here. I promise I'll be back soon. The vixen pressed against his legs, her fur bristling as she looked at the island. What are you waiting for, fox? Said Jacob.
Find me that boat.
Chapter 26. The Red Fairy. Fox found the boat, and this time she didn't ask Jacob to take her along. However, just as he climbed in, she bit his hand so hard that the blood trickled down his fingers.
That's so you won't forget me,
she snapped, and her eyes brimmed with the fear that she might lose him again. 3 years ago, the fairies had chased Fox away after they'd found Jacob, half dead, in their forest, and she had nearly drowned trying to follow them to the island. And yet she had waited for him a whole year, while he forgot all about her and everything else. Now she sat there again, her fur blackened by the approaching night, even after he'd already rowed far out into the lake. Clara, too, stood among the willows, and this time even Will watched him go. It's too late for me. The waves lapping against the narrow boat seemed to echo Will's words, but who better to break the spell of the dark fairy than her sister? Jacob reached for the medallion on his chest. He had picked the petal inside on the day he'd left Miranda. It made him invisible to her, as if he'd cast off not only his love, but also the body that had loved her. A petal. Nothing more. She herself had told him that he could hide himself from her this way. When fairies were in love, they revealed all their secrets in their sleep. You just had to ask the right questions. Fortunately, the petal also made him invisible to the other fairies. As he hid the boat in the reeds on the island's shore, Jacob saw four of them standing in the water. Their long hair floated on the surface as if the night itself had spun it. But Miranda was not among them. One of them looked his way, and Jacob was grateful for the thick carpet of flowers that made his steps as silent as Fox's paws. He had seen how they turned men into thistles or fish. The flowers were blue, like the bluebell Clara had picked, and not even the medallion could shield Jacob from the memories their scent evoked. Careful, Jacob. He dug his fingers into the bloody imprint Fox's teeth had left on his hand. Soon he saw the first of the dark nets the moths of the fairies spun between the trees. Tents as delicate as lace wing skin, that even in daytime stayed so dark they appeared to have trapped the night in their mesh. The fairies only slept there when the sun was in the sky, but Jacob could think of no better place to wait for Miranda. The Red Fairy. It was by that name that he had first heard mention of her. A drunk mercenary had told him about a friend she had lured to the island and who, after his return, had been so sick with yearning for her, he had drowned himself. Everyone had heard such stories about the fairies, though few ever got to see one. Some thought their island was actually the realm of the dead. But the fairies knew nothing of human time or death. Miranda called the dark fairy her sister only because both of them had emerged from the lake on the same day. So how could she truly understand the despair he felt as his brother grew a skin of stone? The tent, which for almost a year had been the beginning and the end of his world, clung to Jacob's clothes as he felt his way through its gauzy walls. His eyes adapted slowly to the darkness, and he was startled by the sight of a sleeping figure on the bed of moss where he himself had lain so often. She hadn't changed. Of course not. Fairies didn't age. Her skin was as pale as the lilies on the lake, and her hair was as dark as the night she so loved. At night, her eyes turned black, though by day they were as blue as the sky or as green as the water of the lake, mirroring the leaves of the willows. Too beautiful. Too beautiful for human eyes. Untouched by time and the decay it wrought. But in the end, a man wants to sense the same mortality that dwells in his own flesh, also in the skin he caresses. Jacob pulled the medallion from his shirt and unhooked it from the chain around his neck. Miranda stirred as soon as he placed it next to her, and Jacob took a step back as she whispered his name in her dream. It wasn't a good dream, and she opened her eyes with a start. So beautiful. Jacob's fingers sought the bite marks on his hand. Since when do you sleep away the night? For a moment she seemed to think he was still the dream that had woken her, but then she noticed the medallion lying next to her. She opened it and took out the petal. So that's how you hid yourself from me. Jacob wasn't sure what he saw on her face, horror or joy, love or hatred, maybe something of it all. Who told you how? You did. Her moths immediately swarmed at his face as he took a step toward her. You have to help me, Miranda. She got up and brushed the moss from her skin. I used to sleep away the nights because they reminded me too much of you, she said. But that was a long time ago. Now it's just a bad habit. The wings of her moths tinged the night air red. I see you haven't come alone, she said, crumbling the lily petal between her fingers. And you brought a Goyle. He's my brother. This time the moths let him approach her. It's a fairy's curse, Miranda. But you've come to the wrong fairy. You must know a way to break it. She seemed to be made of the shadows that surrounded her, of the moonlight and the night's dew on the leaves. He'd been so happy when this was all he knew. There was so much more. My sister isn't one of us anymore. Miranda turned her back to him. She betrayed us for the Goyle. Then help me! Jacob reached out his hand, but she pushed it away. Why should I? I had to leave. I couldn't stay here forever. That's what my sister said. But fairies don't leave. We belong to the place that brought us into this world. You knew that as well as she did. So beautiful. The memories spun a web in the darkness, entangling them both. Help him, Miranda, please. She raised her hand and brushed her fingers over his lips. Kiss me. It felt as if he were kissing the night or the wind. Her moths were piercing his skin, and all he had lost tasted like ashes in his mouth. When he let her go, he thought for a brief moment he could see his own death in her eyes. A fox was barking outside. Fox always claimed she could feel when he was in danger. Miranda turned her back to him. There is only one remedy against this spell, she said. What is it? You will have to destroy my sister. Jacob's heart stopped for one beat, and he felt his own fear clammy on his skin. The dark fairy.
She turns her enemies into the wine she drinks, or into the iron from which her lover builds his bridges. Even Chanute's voice had sounded hoarse when he'd spoken of her. But she can't be killed, he said. Any more than you can. For a fairy there are far worse things than death. For a moment her beauty was like a poisonous flower. How long does your brother have left? She asked. 2, maybe 3 days. Voices came to them through the dark. The other fairies. Jacob had never found out how many of them there were. Miranda gazed at her bed as if remembering the times they'd shared it. My sister is with the Goyle in his main fortress. That was a ride of at least 6 days. It would be too late. Much too late. Jacob wasn't sure what he felt more, the despair or the relief. Miranda reached out. One of her moths perched delicately on her finger. You can still make it if I give you some time. Fox began to bark again. One of us once cursed a princess to die on her 15th birthday, but we suspended that curse with a deep sleep. In his mind's eye, Jacob saw the castle, wrapped in thorns, and the sleeping beauty in the bedchamber at the top of the tower. She died anyway, he said. Nobody woke her. Miranda shrugged. I'll make your brother sleep. It's up to you to make sure he is awoken, but not before you have broken my sister's power. The moth on her hand was preening its wings. The girl who is with you, she belongs to your brother? Miranda brushed her naked foot over the ground and the moonlight drew Clara's face on the dark earth. Yes, Jacob replied, and he felt something he didn't quite comprehend. Does she love him? Yes, he said. I think so. She'd better. For should she not, he will sleep himself to death. Miranda wiped away the moonlight image. Have you ever met my sister? Jacob shook his head. He had seen blurry photographs, a sketch in a newspaper. The demon lover, the fairy witch, who makes stone grow in the flesh of humans. She is the fairest of us all. Miranda's eyes traced the features of his face as if trying to recall the love she'd once felt. Don't look at her for too long, she said softly. And whatever she promises you, do exactly as I say, or your brother is lost. Fox's bark rang through the night again. I'm fine, Fox, thought Jacob. All will be well, even if he did not yet quite understand how. He took Miranda's hand. 6 fingers, as white as the flowers on the lake. She let him kiss her again. What if the price for my help is that you come back to me? She whispered. Would you do it? Is that your price? He asked, though he was terrified of the answer. She smiled. No, she said. My price will be paid when you destroy my sister. Chapter 27. So Far Away. Will had not once taken his eyes off the island. It was painful for Clara to see the fear on his face. Fear of himself and of what Jacob would learn on the island, but, first and foremost, fear that his brother wouldn't come back, that he would be left alone with his skin of stone. He had forgotten Clara, but she still went to him. The stone didn't yet completely conceal the one she loved, and he was so alone. Jacob will be back soon, Will. I'm sure. He didn't turn around. With Jacob, you never know when he'll come back, he said. Believe me, I know what I'm talking about. They were both here. The stranger from the cave, whose iciness she could still taste on her tongue like poison, and the other one, who had stood in the hospital corridor in front of his mother's room and smiled at her every time she walked past. Will. She missed him so much. He'll come back, she said. I know it. And he'll find a way. He loves you, even though he's not very good at showing it. Will shook his head. You don't know him, he said, turning his back to the lake as though he was sick of seeing his reflection in the water. Jacob has never been able to accept that not everything turns out right,
that some things and some people just get lost. He averted his face as if remembering the jade. But Clara didn't see it. This was still the face she loved, the mouth she had kissed so often. Even the eyes were still his, despite the gold. But when she reached out, he shuddered, as he had done in the cave, and the night was like a black river running between them. Will pulled from inside his coat the pistol that Jacob had given him. "Here, take this," he said. "You may need it if Jacob doesn't come back, and should I no longer remember your name tomorrow. If you have to kill him, the other one with the stone face, just remember that he has done the same to me." She wanted to back away, but Will held on to her, pushing the gun into her hand. He avoided touching her skin, but he ran his fingers through her hair. "I'm so sorry," he whispered. Then he stepped past her and disappeared beneath the willows. Clara stared at the pistol. Then she took a few steps toward the lake and hurled it into the dark water. Chapter 28. Just a Rose. Jacob stayed the whole night, even though every hour tasted of ash. He loosened Miranda's black hair from the darkness and sought solace in her white skin. He allowed his fingers to remember and his mind to forget. Outside, the other fairies laughed and whispered, and Jacob wondered whether she would protect him should they discover him. He didn't really care. That night, nothing mattered. No tomorrow. No yesterday. No brother and no father. Just black hair and white skin and red wings writing words he didn't understand into the dark night. But when even the canopy could no longer shield them from the day, the bite on his hand started to throb. Everything flooded back. The fear, the stone, the gold in Will's eyes, and the hope that he might yet have found a way to put an end to it all. Miranda didn't ask him whether he would come back, but before he left, she made him repeat everything she'd taught him about her dark sister, word for word. Brother, sister. The lilies were already closing in the first rays of the sun. Jacob saw none of the other fairies as he returned to the boat, but the froth drifting on the lake heralded that soon the water would give birth to another. Will was nowhere to be seen as Jacob rowed back toward the lake shore, but Clara was asleep between the willows. She woke with a start as he pushed the boat ashore. After the beauty of the fairies, her tired face resembled a wildflower beside a bouquet of lilies. But she didn't seem to mind the leaves in her hair or her dirty clothes. All Jacob saw on Clara's face was relief that he was back and fear for his brother. "Your brother will need her, and you will too." Fox had once again been right. She always was, and luckily this time he had listened to her. She came out from under the willow branches, her fur bristling, as though she knew exactly why he'd returned only now. "That was a long night," she said testily. "I'd started checking the fish to see if there was one that looked like you." "I'm back, aren't I?" Jacob retorted. "And she'll help him." "Why? Why? Does it matter?" "Because she can. Because she doesn't like her sister. I don't really care, as long as she does it." Fox stared across the lake, her eyes narrowed with suspicion. Clara, however, looked so relieved that all the weariness vanished from her face. "When?" she asked. "Soon." Fox could tell from his face that there was more to it, but she kept quiet. She knew she wouldn't like the whole truth. Clara was too happy to notice any of this. "Fox thought you'd forgotten about us." Will stepped out from under the willows, and for an instant Jacob thought he'd stayed too long on the island. The jade had darkened. It merged with the green of the trees. The world behind the mirror had finally turned Will into a part of it. It had sown its seed in his flesh, like a parasite laying its eggs in the body of a caterpillar, and now it stared at Jacob with golden eyes, gripping his brother in its fangs. But he would free him with the same weapon the mirror world had used against him, the words of a fairy. "We have to find a rose," Jacob said. "A rose? That's it?" The jade face was impassive, so familiar and yet so strange. "Yes, it grows not far from here." "And then, brother, you will sleep, and I'll have to find the dark fairy. You can't just make it disappear." the way Will looked at him, as if he'd forgotten and yet remembered everything that had driven them apart. "Can't I?" Jacob replied. "I know that she can help you. Just do what I tell you, and everything will be all right." Fox wouldn't take her eyes off him. They were saying, "What are you trying to do, Jacob Reckless? You are scared." "So what, Fox?" he wanted to reply. "It's a feeling I've gotten quite used to by now." Chapter 29. In the Heart. They rode northward along the lakeshore, time drowned in the scent of the blossoms, in the light breaking on the water, and for the first time, Clara felt ready to forgive this world for all the fear and all the gloom. Everything would be all right. Everything. Jacob soon turned his back to the lake. The horses sank deep into the vines of the brambles and the fronds of the ferns. Above them, the leaves were again turning yellow. A cool wind rushed through the branches, and beyond the trees Clara could already see the valley where the unicorns grazed. They were still far, barely visible in the mist that hung between the mountains. But their dead kin lay at Clara's feet in the yellow grass. Their skeletons were everywhere, moss and grass between their ribs, spiderwebs spanning their hollow eye sockets, the white horns still on their bare-boned foreheads. The unicorn's graveyard. Maybe they came here to die because it was easier under the canopy of the branches, or because in death they sought to be near the fairies. Vines with tiny white blossoms wove their tendrils through the bleached bones, like a final salute from the fairies to their faithful guards. Jacob dismounted and approached one of the skeletons. A single red rose was growing out of its chest. "Will, come here." He waved his brother to his side. Fox ran under the trees and peered toward the unicorns, her muzzle raised in the breeze.
"I smell Goyle."
"So? Will's right behind you." Jacob turned his back to the valley. "Pick the rose, Will." Will put out his hand and drew it back again. He looked at his jade-green fingers. Then he looked at Clara, searching her face for the one he had once been.
"Please, Will."
She didn't say it, but she thought it, again and again. "Do what your brother says." And here among the flowers and the dead, for one precious moment, he looked at her as he once used to. "All will be well." He picked the rose and Clara heard the woody stem snap. One of its thorns pricked his finger, and Will looked in surprise at the pale amber blood oozing from his petrified skin. He dropped the rose and rubbed his forehead.
"What is this?"
he said, faltering and looking at his brother.
"What have you done?"
Clara reached out to him, but Will flinched away from her, stumbling over one of the skeletons. The bones cracked, like rotten wood under his boots. "Will, listen," Jacob grabbed his arm. "You have to sleep. I need more time. When you wake up, all this will be over. I promise." But Will shoved him away with such violence that Jacob staggered back out of the shelter of the trees into the open expanse of the autumnal meadow.
"Jacob!"
Fox yelped.
"Come back under the trees!"
The image would stay with Clara forever. Jacob looking back. And then the gunshot. Such a sharp sound, like wood splintering. The bullet struck Jacob's chest. Fox cried out as he fell on the yellow grass. Will ran to him before Clara could hold him back. He dropped to his knees next to his brother, calling his name, but Jacob didn't move. Blood stained his shirt right above his heart. The Goyle appeared out of the mist like a bad dream, still holding the rifle. He was limping, and his left arm seemed to be injured as well. One of his soldiers was by his side. The girl Jacob had shot as she attacked Clara with her saber. Her uniform was still soaked with her colourless blood. Fox leaped at them with bared fangs, but the Goyle just kicked her out of the way. The vixen shifted shape, the pain robbing her of her fur. Clara wrapped her arms protectively around Fox as she cowered into the grass, sobbing. Will got to his feet, his face ablaze with rage. He reached the rifle Jacob had dropped, but he stumbled groggily, and the Goyle grabbed him and pressed the gun to his temple.
"Easy now,"
he said, while the she-goyle pointed her pistol at Clara.
"I had a score to settle with your brother, but we won't harm a hair on you."
Fox struggled out of Clara's embrace and pulled the pistol from Jacob's belt. The she-goyle kicked it out of her hand while Will just stood there, staring down at his brother.
"Look at him, Nesser," the goyle said, roughly turning Will's face toward him. "He really is turning jade."
Will tried to ram his head into the goyle's face, but he was too numbed. The goyle laughed.
"You're one of us, all right," he said. "Even if you can't accept it yet. Tie his hands," he ordered the she-goyle.
Then he went over to Jacob's body and examined it as a hunter would his prey.
"His face looks familiar. What's his name?"
he asked Will. Will didn't answer.
"Never mind," the goyle said, turning away. "You Doskins all look the same anyway. Round up the horses," he barked at the girl.
Then he pushed Will toward Jacob's mare.
"Where are you taking him?"
Clara barely recognized her own voice. The goyle didn't even turn around.
"Forget him," he said over his shoulder. "He will soon forget you."
Chapter 30. A Shroud of Red Bodies. The gunshot wound looked much less harmful than the wound Jacob had suffered when the unicorns tore open his back. Back then, however, Jacob had been breathing, and Fox had felt his faint pulse. Now he was just still. So much pain. She wanted to dig her teeth into her flesh just not to feel it anymore. Her fur wouldn't come back, and she felt as exposed and lost as an abandoned child. Clara was cowering next to her in the grass, her arms clasped around her knees. She shed no tears. She just sat there, as if someone had cut out her heart. Clara was the first to see the dwarf. He was wading toward them through the grass, looking as innocent as if they'd caught him picking mushrooms. However, who else but a dwarf could have told the goyle that the only way out of the fairy realm was through the unicorn graveyard? Fox wiped the tears from her eyes and felt through the grass for Jacob's pistol.
"Stop, stop! What are you doing?"
Valiant yelled as she pointed the weapon at him. He quickly cowered behind the nearest bush.
"How could I know they'd shoot him right away? I thought they just wanted his brother."
Clara got to her feet. "Shoot him, Fox," she said. "If you don't, I will."
"Wait,"
Valiant clamoured.
"They caught me on my way back to the gorge. What was I supposed to do? Get myself killed as well? And now,"
Fox yelled at him,
"come to plunder a corpse on your way back? That's outrageous. I'm here to rescue you,"
the dwarf retorted with genuine indignation.
"Two girls, all alone, lost and helpless."
"So helpless that we'll surely pay you to save us." The silence answering from the bush was very telling, and Fox lifted the pistol again. If only she could stop tears. They blurred everything. The misty valley, the bush where the treacherous dwarf was hiding, and Jacob's lifeless face.
"Fox!"
Clara put a hand on her arm. A red moth had landed on Jacob's punctured chest. Another landed on his brow. Fox dropped the pistol.
"Get away from him!"
she shouted, her voice drowning in tears.
"Go and tell your mistress he's never coming back!"
She leaned over Jacob.
"Didn't I tell you?"
she whispered.
"Not to go back to the fairies. This time it will kill you."
Another moth landed on the still body. More and more of them fluttered out of the trees. They settled on him in such profusion that they looked like flowers sprouting from his shattered flesh. Fox tried to drive the moths away, but there were too many. Finally, she gave up and simply watched as they covered Jacob with their wings. It was as if the red fairy was claiming him even in death. Clara knelt next to Fox and wrapped her arms around her. "We have to bury him." Fox freed herself from Clara's embrace and pressed her face against Jacob's chest.
"I'll do it."
The dwarf had actually dared to venture closer. He picked up the rifle Jacob had dropped, and as if the metal were as soft as clay, he slapped the barrel flat with his bare hand, shaping it into a spade.
"Bloody waste," he muttered as he attacked the soil. 2 pounds of red moonstone, and now nobody will get it."
The dwarf dug the grave effortlessly, as if it had a lot of practice. Fox just sat there, her arms wrapped around Clara, and looked at Jacob's still face. The moths were still covering him like a shroud when Valiant threw down his shovel and brushed the dirt off his hands.
"Right,"
he said.
"Let's get him in there."
He leaned over Jacob.
"But first of all, we should check his pockets. No point in letting perfectly good gold sovereigns rot in the ground."
Fox's fur returned in an instant.
"Don't touch him,"
she hissed, snapping at Valiant's eager fingers.
"Bite him, Fox, as hard as you can. Maybe that will ease the pain."
The dwarf tried to fend her off with a shovel rifle, but she tore into his coat and jumped at his throat until Clara grabbed her by her fur and pulled her back.
"Fox, don't,"
she whispered, pressing the quivering body against hers. "He's right. We'll need the money, and Jacob's weapons, the compass, everything he had with him."
"Why?"
"To find Will." What was she talking about? Behind them, the dwarf snorted in disbelief.
"Will? There is no more Will."
Clara bent over Jacob and put her hand in his coat pocket.
"We'll give you all he had, if you help us find his brother," she said. "That's what he would have wanted."
She pulled the handkerchief from Jacob's pocket. 2 gold sovereigns dropped onto his chest. The moth swirled up like leaves stirred by an autumn breeze.
"Strange how little resemblance there was between the two," Clara said, brushing the dark hair from Jacob's forehead. "Do you have sisters, Fox?"
3 brothers."
Fox rubbed her head against Jacob's lifeless hand. A last moth rose from his chest.
Suddenly she flinched. His body shuddered, his lips gasped for air, and his hands clawed into the grass.
"Jacob!"
Fox impulsively jumped on his chest, causing him to groan with pain.
"No grave. No damp soil on his face." She bit his chin and his cheeks. Oh, she just wanted to eat him up with love.
"Oh, Fox, what are you doing?"
He grabbed her and sat up. Clara backed away from him, as if from a ghost. The dwarf dropped his shovel. But Jacob just sat there and looked at his bloody shirt.
"Whose blood is this?"
"Yours!"
Fox nestled against his chest to feel his heartbeat.
"The goyal shot you."
Jacob looked at her incredulously. Then he unbuttoned his blood-soaked shirt. But instead of a wound, there was only the pale red imprint of a moth on the skin above his heart.
"You are dead, Jacob."
Clara struggled with the words as if her tongue had to search for every syllable.
"Dead."
Jacob touched the mark on his chest. He wasn't all there yet. Fox could see it in his eyes. But finally he looked around.
"Where's Will?"
Jacob struggled to his feet and he noticed the dwarf standing behind him. Valiant gave him his broadest smile.
"That fairy must have really taken quite a fancy to you. I heard they sometimes bring their lovers back from the dead, but they also do that for the ones who ran out on them."
He shook his head and picked up the warped rifle.
"Where's my brother?"
Jacob took a step toward the dwarf, but Valiant managed to evade him with a quick leap across the empty grave.
"Easy now,"
he called, waving the rifle at Jacob.
"How am I supposed to tell you if you wring my neck?"
Clara pushed the handkerchief and the gold sovereigns back into Jacob's pocket.
"I'm sorry, I didn't know how to find Will without you."
She pressed her face against his shoulder.
"I thought I'd lost you both."
"Don't worry." Jacob stroked her hair soothingly, all the while keeping his eyes fixed on Valiant.
"We'll find Will, I promise. We don't need the dwarf for that."
"Really?"
Valiant snapped the bent barrel off the rifle as if it were a brittle twig.
"They're taking your brother to the Royal Fortress. The last human who tried to sneak in there was an Imperial spy. They cast him in amber and put him on display right next to the main gate. Terrible sight."
Jacob picked up his pistol and pushed it back into his belt. "But of course, you know a way to get in." Valiant's mouth stretched into such a smug grin that Fox bared her teeth.
"Of course."
Jacob eyed the dwarf as if he were a poisonous snake. "How much?" Valiant bent the broken rifle into shape.
That gold tree you sold to the Empress last year. Word is, you kept a cutting.
Fortunately, Valiant missed the look Fox shot at Jacob. There was indeed a cutting. It grew behind the ruin by the scorched stables, but the only gold it had yielded so far was its foul-smelling pollen. Still, Jacob managed to produce an expression of honest indignation.
That's an outrageous price.
Appropriate is more the word.
Valiant's eyes were glinting as if he could already feel the gold raining down on his shoulders.
And the vixen has to take me to it, even if you don't make it out of the fortress alive. I want your word of honour on it.
Honour?
Fox growled.
I'm surprised that word doesn't make your lips blister.
The dwarf leered at her. Jacob, however, held out his hand to him. Give him your word, Fox, he said. No matter what happens, he'll have earned himself that tree. Chapter 31 Dark Glass. Without the horses, it took them hours to reach a road that led from the valley up into the mountains, and Jacob had to carry Valiant on his back so the dwarf wouldn't slow them down even more. Finally, a farmer gave them a lift on his cart to the next village, where Jacob bought two new horses and a donkey for the dwarf. The horses weren't fast, but at least they were used to the steep mountain paths, and Jacob only stopped when the darkness made them lose their way. He found a spot beneath a rocky outcrop that gave some protection from the cold wind. Soon Valiant was snoring as loudly as if he were in one of the soft beds for which dwarf inns were famous. Fox scampered off to hunt, and Jacob advised Clara to bed down next to the horses so that they would keep her warm. Then he lit a fire with some dry wood he'd found among the rocks and tried to regain some of the calm he had felt on the island. Again and again, he caught himself touching the dried blood on his shirt, but all he remembered was Will's accusing stare after he'd been pricked by the rose, and then a relieved Fox nudging his face with her muzzle. In between, there was nothing, just an echo of pain and darkness. And his brother was gone. When you wake up, all this will be over, I promise. How, Jacob? Even if the dwarf didn't double-cross him again, even if he managed to find the dark fairy in the fortress, how was he going to get close enough to touch her, let alone utter what he'd learned from her sister before she could kill him? Don't think, Jacob. Just go. He felt a searing impatience, as if death had only increased his old restlessness. Ride, Jacob. Onward, just as you've done for years. The wind drove into the flames and he buttoned his coat over his bloody shirt. Jacob? Clara was standing behind him. She had wrapped a horse blanket around her shoulders, and he noticed that her hair had grown longer. How are you feeling? In her voice, Jacob still heard the disbelief that he was actually alive. Fine, he answered. Would you like to check my pulse, just to make sure? She had to smile, but the concern in her eyes remained. An owl was screaming above them. In this world, owls were regarded as the souls of dead witches. Clara knelt next to him on the cold earth and held her hands above the warming flames. Do you still think you can help Will? She looked terribly tired. Yes, he said. And trust me, you don't want to know more than that. It would just scare you. When she looked at him, her eyes were as blue as Will's, before they had drowned in gold. Is that the reason you didn't tell Will why he had to pick that rose? The wind blew sparks into her hair. I think your brother knows more about fear than you do. Words. Nothing more. But they turned the night into dark glass in which Jacob saw himself. I know why you're here. Clara's voice sounded distant, as though she was speaking not about him, but about herself. This world doesn't frighten you half as much as the other one. You have nothing and nobody to lose here, except Fox. She clearly worries more about you than you do about her. You've left all that could frighten you in the other world. But then Will came here and brought it all with him. She got up again and wiped the earth off her knees. Whatever you're planning, please be careful. Getting yourself killed for Will won't make up for anything. But if there is a way, any way to turn him back into who he was, then let me help, even if you think it'll frighten me. You're not the only one who doesn't want to lose him. Why else would I still be here? Clara walked off before Jacob could answer. He wished her far away, and he was glad she wasn't. And he saw his face in the dark glass of the night, undistorted, just as she had drawn it. Chapter 32. The River. It took them another 4 days to reach the mountains the Goyle called home. Frosty days, cold nights, rain and damp clothes. One of the horses lost a shoe, and the blacksmith they took it to told Clara about a Bluebeard who had bought 3 girls, barely older than her, from their fathers in a nearby village, and had taken them to his castle and murdered them. Clara listened impassively, but Jacob could tell from her expression that by now she considered her own story to be almost as horrific.
"What's she still doing here?"
Valiant asked in a whisper one morning, while the bone-weary Clara struggled to mount her horse.
"The things you humans do to your females. She belongs in a house. Nice dresses, servants, cakes, a soft bed. That's what she needs.
And a dwarf for a husband, and a golden lock on her door to which only you have the key," Jacob retorted.
"And why not?"
Valiant replied, giving Clara his most ravishing smile. The nights were so cold that they stayed in inns. Clara shared her bed with Fox, and Jacob slept next to the snoring dwarf. But that was not the only reason he slept badly. In his dreams, he was smothered by red moths, and he would wake up drenched in sweat, tasting his own blood in his mouth. On the evening of the 4th day, they saw the first of the towers the Goyle had built along their borders. Slender stalagmites with fibrous walls and windows of onyx. But Valiant knew a path through the mountains to avoid them. For centuries, the Goyle had been just one of the terrors of these lands, mentioned in the same breath as ogres and brown wolves. All along, their worst crime had been to look too human. They were the despised twins, stone cousins who dwelled in the dark. Nowhere had they been hunted as mercilessly as in the mountains they came from, and now the Goyle were paying back in kind. It was in their old homeland that their rule was most merciless. Valiant avoided the highways used by their troops, but they still kept meeting Goyle patrols. The dwarf introduced Jacob and Clara as rich clients who were planning to build a glass factory near the royal fortress. Jacob had bought Clara one of the gold-embroidered skirts worn by the rich women of the area, and he had swapped his own clothes for those of a wealthy merchant. He barely recognized himself in the fur-collared coat and the soft grey trousers. Riding had become even more cumbersome for Clara in the wide skirt, but at least the Goyle always waved them past after Valiant had told them his story. On an evening that had already carried the scent of snow, they finally reached the river beyond which the royal fortress lay. The ferry crossing was in Blenheim, a town the Goyle had taken many years before. Nearly half the houses had bricked up windows. Conquerors had even canopied many of the rows to protect themselves from the sun. And behind the harbour wall, there was a heavily guarded manhole, indicating that this town now also had an underground district. Fox disappeared between the houses to catch herself one of the scrawny chickens that were pecking at the cobblestones. Jacob walked with Valiant and Clara across the square toward the ferry landing. The evening sky was glistening on the murky waters, and on the opposite shore he could see a rectangular gate gaping in the mountainside. "Is that the entrance to the fortress?" Jacob asked the dwarf. But Valiant shook his head.
"No, no, that's just one of the cave cities they built above ground after the fortress got too crowded. What you want is farther inland, and it lies so deep underground that you'll wish you could unlearn to breathe."
Jacob tethered the horses and walked with Clara toward the jetty. The ferryman was already padlocking his boat. He looked nearly as hideous as the trolls in the north, who were constantly being frightened by their own reflections. His boat had also seen better days. The shallow hull was clad in iron, and when Jacob asked the ferryman whether he could take them across before nightfall, his face warped into a scornful grin.
"This river ain't very hospitable place after dark.
He spoke so loudly as if he wanted to be heard clear across the river. And as of tomorrow, all crossings will be suspended because the crowned Goyle will emerge from his den to go to his wedding.
Wedding?
Valiant shrugged in response to Jacob's puzzled look.
Where have you been? The ferryman sneered. Your empress is giving him her daughter to buy peace from the Stonefaces. Tomorrow, they'll swarm out of their holes like termites, and the Goyle will ride to Vina on his devil train and take the loveliest princess in the land with him to his burrow.
Will the fairy go with him? Valiant cast Jacob a curious glance. The ferryman, however, just shrugged.
Sure. The Goyle goes nowhere without her. Not even when he marries another woman.
Once again, time is running out on you, Jacob. Jacob put his hand in his pocket. Did you take a Goyle officer across today?
What?
The ferryman held a hand behind his ear. A Goyle officer, Jasper Skin. Nearly blind in one eye, he had a prisoner with him. The ferryman shot a sideways glance at the Goyle sentry by the wall, but the soldier was out of earshot and had his back turned to them.
Why, you one of them headhunters?
The ferryman had lowered his voice, but he was still speaking so loudly that now it was Jacob's turn to cast a worried glance at the sentry.
His prisoner would fetch you a fine price. He had a colour I ain't seen on any of them yet.
Jacob would have loved to punch his ugly face. Instead, he pulled a gold sovereign from his handkerchief. You'll get another one on the other side if you take us across tonight. The ferryman eyed the coin greedily, but Valiant grabbed Jacob's arm and pulled him aside.
Let's wait until tomorrow, he hissed at him. It's getting dark, and this river is swarming with Lorelei.
Lorelei. Jacob looked at the languid water. His grandfather had sometimes sung him a song about Lorelei. The words had made him shudder as a child, but the stories told about the Lorelei in this world were even more sinister. Still, he didn't have much choice.
No worries,
the ferryman put out his calloused hand.
We won't wake them.
But once Jacob had dropped the gold sovereign into his palm, the ferryman reached into his baggy pockets, handing him and Valiant each a pair of wax earplugs, which looked distinctly as if they'd been used before.
Just to be on the safe side, he said. You never know.
He flashed Clara a sly grin.
You won't need them. The Lorelei are only after us men.
Fox came running down the jetty as they led the horses onto the ferry. She licked a few feathers from her fur before jumping aboard the shallow boat. The horses were restless, but the ferryman pushed the gold coins into his pocket and untied the ropes. The ferry drifted out onto the river. Behind them, the houses of Blenheim dissolved into the twilight, and the only sound was the lapping of the water against the metal-clad hull. The opposite shore was slowly coming closer, and the ferryman gave Jacob a wink. But the horses were still restless, and Fox was standing with pricked ears. A voice wafted across the water. At first it sounded like a bird singing, but then more and more like a woman's voice. The voice was coming from the direction of the rocks that protruded from the water to their left, grey boulders that made it seem as if the twilight itself had been turned to stone. A shape moved on the rock and slid into the water. A second followed. And then they were everywhere. Valiant uttered a curse.
What did I tell you?
He hissed at Jacob.
Faster!
He shouted at the ferryman.
Come on!
The man seemed to hear neither the dwarf nor the voices that drifted ever more enticingly across the water. It was only when Jacob put a hand on his shoulder that he spun around.
He can't hear!
Valiant screamed, already stuffing the wax into his ears.
That cunning dog is nearly as deaf as a dead fish!
The ferryman just shrugged and clutched his oar more tightly. Jacob, pushing the grimy earplugs into his ears, wondered how often the ferryman had come back without his passengers. The horses shied. Jacob could barely control them. The last daylight was fading, and the shore inched toward them so painfully slowly as if the water was dragging them back again. Clara stood close by Jacob's side, and Fox posted herself protectively in front of him, though he could see that her fur was bristling with fear. The voices grew so loud that Jacob could hear them through the earplugs, luring him into the water. Clara pulled him back from the guardrail, but the singing seeped through his skin like sweet venom. Heads emerged from the waves, hair drifting on the water like spun gold, and as Clara let go of him for 1 second to press her hands over her own aching ears, Jacob felt his fingers reaching for the protective wax, pulling it out of his ears and throwing it overboard. The singing ran through his brain like honey-coated knives. Clara tried to hold him back as he staggered toward the edge of the ferry. Jacob shoved her away so hard that she stumbled against the ferryman. Where were they? Jacob leaned over the water and at first saw only his own reflection, but then it melted into a face. It looked like the face of a woman, except it didn't have a nose. The eyes were silver, and fangs pushed out over the pale green lips. Arms reached out of the river, and fingers closed around Jacob's wrist. Another hand grabbed his hair. Water lapped into the ferry. They were everywhere, reaching out for him, their scaly bodies pushed halfway out of the water, their teeth bared. Lorelei. Much worse than the song. Reality always was so much worse. Fox dug her teeth into one of the scaly arms that had grabbed him, but the other Lorelei were already pulling Jacob over the guardrail. He struggled against them, but finally he lost his footing. Then he heard a shot, and the mermaid sank back into the murky water, a gaping hole in her head.